It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
70 and 10 years ago, our fathers killed a lot of their brothers. How you doing, Will?
Well, do you remember a while back I was saying that former guest of the podcast, Barb Heller,
yes,
was trying to set me up with someone.
Sell you to a friend of hers.
And she gave me this girl's number, and I called, and this girl, she never called me back.
This is what you get for trying and making effort.
Well, Barb Heller is back, and she apparently muscled this girl into calling me.
So now it's not only a pity date, but it's an... It's like a hostage situation.
Yeah, so in theory, I'm going to go out with this girl this weekend.
Now, what does she look like?
Oh, I don't know. Barb Heller said she looked like Lea Michele.
Okay.
That's good.
Could be. Or she could have all the worst features of Lea Michele, none of the good stuff. Just a big nose and a high-pitched voice.
This girl knows I have a podcast. I hope she doesn't listen to this one right before
I'm
the
sure
date.
She's lovely and wonderful. We're only speaking out of fear.
My fear is that Barb Heller, as you know, famous Jew on the podcast.
Outside of myself.
My fear is that she's famous. She dated like 100 Jewish guys or whatever. My fear is that me and this girl are the only two Gentiles she knows, and that's why she thinks we'll be a good fit.
It's like the same logic of people who have gay friends and they know multiple gay people, and they're like, oh, you're gay, he's gay, you should go out. It's like, well, there's more to it than that.
Well, I'm sure I'll be here to report next week. How this went.
Fantastic.
What's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
We finally hit 214, so I'm once again moving the goalposts. Road to 223.
223 Facebook likes.
Or else the kitten gets it.
Exactly. I expect to see these numbers go up this week.
I hope so, and everything's good. You know, iTunes, subscribe, write a comment. A few things. Alex Stein, guest of the podcast last week, his book is now available on Amazon. And you can, an actual physical book, you can buy it, you can hold it, you can touch it. And...
like your grandparents used to.
Exactly. So that is now available. Definitely pick up a copy because, as we talked about last week, it's hilarious and fantastic.
And also, former guest Liz Feamy, terrific former guest, her play got extended beyond the Hollywood Fringe Festival, her play Take Me to the Poorhouse. So, you know, find them. You can find them on Twitter. You can find them just by Googling it. And go see that play if you live here in Hollywood.
Because it's really good.
It's really good. I was very impressed with it. Who's the sponsor this week?
Oh, well. Celebrate our Independence Day the way our forefathers did, with homemade fireworks. Tea Party Patriots and Americans for Prosperity are proud to announce Freedom Fireworks. Using materials only available in revolutionary times, these home kits come with a dozen iron tubes packed with a combination of strontium carbonate, copper chloride, and magnesium, which, when combusted, create constitutionally brilliant red, white, and blue explosions that will prove to everyone in your neighborhood just how big your patriotism is. This 4th of July, do it right. Do it for America.
I am hoping to lose many fingers this year.
With the Tea Party Firework Kit.
With the Tea Party Firework Kit. On the show today, is the Lone Ranger racist? There are more lists that we're going to break down because we can't get enough of lists.
You know who like lists? The Nazis.
And the podcasters. We were just following orders. And, this week I got a bone to pick with the news. So we're going to talk about the news. if that wasn't general enough for you. But first, we're very excited to have with us today, Zach. Oh, no. Now it's in my head. Zach Bassetta.
You got it.
There we go. I had to write it down and read it phonetically.
And then I still forgot. Because I'd been saying Bassetta, like Reseda. Mm-hmm. I apologize. But it's
not
Bassetta.
I'm used to it. Telemarketers always say Bassetta, so.
How are you still getting telemarketers?
Well, I mean, growing up.
You know? Oh, okay.
So, I've just been used to it for
so
long.
Speaking of growing up, well, welcome. You are
Thanks for having me, man.
Yes.
Men?
You are a comic and a... Well, we met you at a storytelling show.
Storyteller.
Yes.
You do many things, which we're going to get to. But let's get a little bit of your origin story first.
Okay.
Where are you from?
I'm from the last son of Waco, Texas.
Right.
What they ran out on. There was one bullet left, or they ran out of bullets?
I just saw Man of Steel the other day, so I've been thinking about it a lot, I guess. but yeah, no, I'm from Texas, Waco. Was never in a religious cult. And I moved out here like 8 years ago, so...
I gotta ask.
The bridge version, yeah.
Because that all happened. That whole David Koresh thing happened when you were there, young, as a young man.
Yes, but I was in the fifth grade at the time, so we had no idea, like, me and my friends, you know, what was going on.
But you're, like, in a small town. How could you not...
Well, Waco's not that small of a town, actually. I mean, it's kind of, like, medium-sized. I mean, it's a pretty big area.
Okay.
It was actually going to be the capital of Texas... but when they were back deciding those sort of things, the mayor at the time wouldn't let them put the railroad through, so they went with Austin.
What town does not want the railroad through? That's how the business comes.
Railroad's not coming through Waco.
Yeah, well...
Well, this was shortly after the name was changed, and I'm not making this up, from Six Shooter Junction.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
Man.
Isn't it?
You kind of wish they had kept that
name. I do!
What were some of the decisions that went into, all right, everyone, we're changing the kick-ass name and we're not having the railroad come into town?
I don't know. Yeah. I question those every day of my life.
Did they consider going back to being part of Mexico as well?
I didn't hear that decision.
I'd like to think that that's why you left Waco. It was because you were annoyed that the railroad hadn't come through. But you ended up coming, did you come straight from Waco?
He took the Amtrak here, ironically.
Yeah.
I actually drove here in about 23 hours when I moved out here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was just a stupid, ill-conceived plan. I'd had this whole strategy of driving out with my best friend from college, making a weekend out of it, and he'd already bought a plane ticket to fly back, and this guy who was from Waco but had already been making a living as a cinematographer in L.A. came back to Waco to shoot his debut feature as a director. And this took about 4 years. And on the fourth year, every summer for four years.
Okay.
Yeah, not four consecutive years. And he was like, hey, man, I really got to get this final cut back to L.A. as soon as possible. If you will let me ride out there with you, I will, you know, get you a job, you know, when you're in L.A.
How'd that work out?
I never worked for him. but, yeah, it was a really harrowing experience.
So you had to get here fast.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was like one straight shot.
By the way, that filmmaker he's talking about, Terrence Malick.
I don't think
who
so.
Who is from Waco, Texas. Is
it? Well, it was not Terrence Malick, but his son, his adopted... The guy that was the lead in the film is... who the fuck cares? Can I swear? Is that fine?
No.
Fuck yes.
Okay, cool. Just making sure. His son was his... Terrence Malick had married his mom, however that makes the most sense to say.
His stepson.
Yes, stepson. Okay. Yes.
It was Terrence, and that's why it took 4 years to make.
And oh, man. But the movie actually turned out really well, I have to say, and it never got any distribution, which I was kind of shocked by.
Not even with any Malick pull, doesn't he?
Well, you know, the Malick name opens doors in this town.
Well, I'm pretty sure that this guy got cut out of Thin Red Line, which is where... He met
everybody. Yeah, cut out of Thin
exactly.
Red Line.
So that's kind of almost like something to brag about, you know.
Well, I'm so curious about this, but we should probably move on about you. So you've come out here and you've been doing like comedy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
Pretty well. I had to take nearly a year off just because work got so swamped. I was doing like, you know, a full shift, and I was a contractor. So if I took a side project but did it outside of, you know, office hours, I could get paid for both of them. Mm. And so I spent like 8 months doing this one like gigantic project for work. And I was moving, you know, and so only recently have I, you know, kind of been getting back into it, but you know, it's been fun.
And we met you at a storytelling show.
Yes.
So is that something else that now you're trying to,
I would be interested in doing more shows like that. This was the first one I've sort of run into. There was another show that I'd gone to, but, and I was interested in getting on, but it wasn't specifically comedy. There was a lot of people like telling like really depressing shit.
That's the thing with storytelling shows is they are storytelling shows.
Right.
Unless they have an explicit be funny mandate, you're going to get a mix of things. And for example, when I performed at Tattletales, one girl told a story about being a pregnant teenager and then giving the child up for adoption and then later reconnecting. there was some humor to be found in the situation, but I wouldn't have called it a funny story.
Sure.
As opposed to, you know, like an open mic or a comedy night, which is a fundamentally different thing.
I have no interest in hearing these people rambling, telling a serious story. I want a rambling, hearing a funny story.
Yeah, man. Like, in the show, and it was, there were really good stories, too. But, I mean, it was like, oh, my dad died when I was a kid, and I never knew him. And just, like, sort of touching stuff. There'd be, like, these morals at the end. But, you know, during the sort of process of getting there.
I'm all for, like, it having, like, an emotional point. But I kind of go by the standard, and I know a former guest, Alex Alexander, runs a Fez show. She always says each paragraph has to have at least one big laugh.
Right.
To keep the people, and I think that's fair.
Sure. Yeah. You know what? I think that's a very fair assessment. Okay, so you did a storytelling show, and you also were telling us earlier that for a while, I thought this was great, you had your own podcast as well.
Yeah, I was doing a podcast for a while through this place, In Traffic Radio, and they're really cool. They're mostly music, and I'd gotten really interested in doing a podcast, but that was also right before, you know, work got crazy, so that was another reason.
But what was the conceit for each episode?
Well, I would have a comic on, like a local, you know, stand-up comedian, and we would discuss how they got into comedy and their influences, and we would also review a breakfast cereal, a different breakfast cereal each week.
Nice.
Yeah, and it was shocking, to be honest, how many cereals didn't really hold up to how you remember them from childhood.
How about Lucky Charms?
Is that Lucky Charms is always great.
I think they've actually changed the formulas in a lot
that
of these, too, to reduce the sugar.
That could be.
Like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, not the same as it used to be.
No, and Fruit Loops was real disappointing.
Man, I haven't.
Now it has actual fruit in it.
What's that?
They actually have real fruit in the Fruit Loops.
Really?
No.
Dude, I'm very gullible, Sean. If you tell me something, I'm probably...
Especially, he's gullible, especially with breakfast cereals, because he takes
well,
them
okay,
seriously.
Well, okay, so now would you go for the sugar cereals, or would you go and get... I used to hate this with my mom when she discovered Whole Foods. All of a sudden, it was like fiber clumps. I was like, this is not cereal, this is barley. This
you
is
know,
what horses eat.
The idea was to really, like, you know, hey, we're going to do all types of cereal, but then I would sort of feel bad if the guy shows up and it's like oat bran week or something. Yeah. It's like, hey, man.
Hey, yeah. Sorry, keeps you regular.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you would more like we're talking Cap'n Crunch and things like that.
Yeah, and I really thought that, you know, aside from, I mean, I love cereal. I think a lot of people like cereal.
Yeah.
There's so many different aspects to each, like each one has like a mascot and like, you know, these different
things that have nothing to do with the taste of the cereal.
Exactly, you know?
I used to love all the like on the Saturday morning cartoons, the cereal commercials.
Oh, they were the best.
The Trix Bunny.
Yes!
And all the, you know.
I need to give you all a piece of advice. This is hard-earned and made my experience dissuade you from ever having to suffer the way I did. Never replace the milk in a bowl of Cheerios with eggnog. It's disgusting.
That does sound disgusting.
I was planning on doing that tomorrow morning.
I was out of milk. I had eggnog. I figured, how bad could it be? Bad.
Where did that idea come from?
No milk, but I still wanted Cheerios.
Sure.
So I had some eggnog.
What's your favorite breakfast cereal?
Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms is pretty good.
Yeah. Although I have to say, there's been this type of cereal that's come out in several different forms when I was a kid. It was a Ninja Turtles, which is how I first discovered it. Then it was a Spider-Man. But it was this... It's like Chex, like the... what do you call those little wheat sort of...
The Chex Square.
Yeah, Chex Square.
They were
Chex
to roll in some characters.
And marshmallows.
Yeah.
And it was delicious. And the Ninja Turtles one went away. The Spider-Man went away. And I haven't been able to find it since then. But
no,
that would be my
favorite.
Probably
under, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something.
Exactly. I mean, if I knew, I'd be able to find
my
it.
My favorite, just straight-up Cheerios. Old school.
I've been eating a lot of Honey Nut Cheerios lately.
Too much sugar.
Because the Cheerios don't have enough sugar for me. But I'm also want to be under the illusion of I'm eating a little healthier than the Lucky Charms. But I love the idea that Lucky Charms now, I don't know if you've seen their recent ads, they have an ad campaign for adults now, trying to get them to eat the Lucky Charms again, where it's this woman and she sees the box of Lucky Charms and she has these memories of the cartoon love.
Very
and
smart.
She pours herself in there. And honestly, very good idea.
I haven't seen these.
It's how do you unironically eat something you purchased ironically?
It's a very nostalgic. I could imagine Don Draper giving the pitch about well, I
that
used to
would
eat,
be hilarious.
I eat clovers.
Clovers. Purple horseshoes.
These are the tastes of childhood. That'd be a funny
Step
short.
Back in time.
I gotta ask you, since you're, I'm like, comic storyteller serial expert. What did you make of this recent Captain Crunch controversy where they said he is in fact not a captain, which is bullshit because he is a captain.
He is. I think, yeah, I mean, well, you know what the story is.
Yeah.
That he had three stripes and captains have four on their sleeves.
True. Just a fucking Commander Crunch.
Exactly. I mean, it's a little pedantic. It's like, you know what, guy? Shut up.
Here's the other thing.
Is Toucan Sam really a toucan? And is the Lucky Charms leprechaun actually Irish?
That's a big controversy.
Well, do you have to be Irish to be a leprechaun? Well, I guess you do.
Yeah.
I guess you do.
Unless you're Warwick Davis.
But you know what? The also, Captain Crunch, they released a statement. Captain Crunch is the commander of a sea-bearing vessel. He is in charge. Thus, he is the captain. Anyone who is in charge of a sea-bearing vessel gets the rank of captain.
Even if that's not your official rank, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, if somehow we were on a boat and somehow I was the most qualified to be in charge, I would thus be captain.
Well, we got the Tom Hanks movie coming out this Christmas, Captain Phillips.
That was the plot of the first Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
Kirk was just the most qualified to be there.
He was Captain Kirk.
Exactly.
So he was Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk, Captain Crunch. I respect all of their ranks.
Captain Horatio Crunch.
Now, before we go on to some other things, I was looking at some links on, like, that you had sent me, and, like, you have a blog?
I do, yes.
No, it was a metal blog.
Yes, and I would love for more people to come see. It's very,
And by metal, you mean music and not actual
building material, yes.
Not building material. Not rebar, not reviewing, like, yeah.
Let me tell you about steel.
Tell us about this metal blog.
Well, gosh, I don't even really know where to begin.
Well, you like metal.
I do like metal music, and I think that a lot of people that don't listen to heavy metal, when I say I like heavy metal, they tend to think of things that I don't listen to. You know what I mean? Like real screamy, sort of loud stuff.
That's what I think of when you say heavy metal.
Yeah, really? Yeah, exactly. And it's like, there's so much more to it. There's so much good stuff out there. And, you know, when you listen to the radio, it's like, there's decent music on there, and it's fine that it exists, but I don't understand why everything has to be very similar. You know, everything that comes
with satellite radio now, there are stations
That's true. But then, also, even if you do listen to metal on satellite radio, you're kind of hearing, you know, Bon Jovi over and over. You hear a lot of the same, well, you know, White Snake or whoever it might be.
Lumineers.
Sure. And so, like, I got really into these different genres of metal, and especially, like, 80s stuff, and these just obscure bands that had a lot of, like, cheesy but really good stuff.
Like Spinal Tap.
Exactly. And, I mean, like, anything that I post on my blog, I genuinely think this is good music, but I also post pictures of the band and sort of make fun of them.
Okay.
Well, because they're easy, and I guess that's also part of the thing, mm-hmm. that some of those bands, just looking at them, they were easy targets to dismiss, but at the same time, if you can do that, have fun with it, but get their music out there to some people who might
like it. Well, but also, it came out during a time when heavy metal was everywhere. And so, you know, at the time, it's like, well, this band's like Def Leppard, this band sounds just like, you know, Iron Maiden or whatever, and they just kind of got lost in the shuffle. And you go back now and you listen to them, it's like, this stuff is really good.
But it just got clumped together.
Exactly.
But also because in the 80s, you only had a few places where music writing was happening,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't like you had a million blogs, there weren't all these websites, you didn't have all the sub-communities, so things could easily get mm-hmm. lost. Look at this documentary that's out now, a band called Death, about these black kids from Detroit that were essentially one of the first punk bands, but because there was no one getting their music out there, and they were so different, they sort of got lost. Okay, so if someone who knows nothing about metal, and you said, okay, this is an album you should listen to, which is like a good entree point, just to get your feet wet, and
it's difficult because there are so many different like, sort of versions, you know, and I try to think of what each individual person might be most interested in hearing. But I think my favorite heavy metal album is the second Iron Maiden album called Killers. And it is very traditional heavy metal. Like, it doesn't really get any more metal at a basic level than that. But it also still had this heavy punk influence, which is a combination that I feel like a lot of people have tried to sort of, and maybe some have, but I think that those first two Iron Maiden albums, even though it's not the most famous singer, his original singer. Really, really good.
Okay. I once, through bizarre circumstances, ended up at a Motley Crue Megadeth concert.
Really?
And that's basically my tale.
What did you think?
Well, it was, you know, we were drinking in the parking lot beforehand, and I only knew two Motley Crue songs, and we were kind of obnoxious when we were in there, because none of us were fans, we just happened to have all these free tickets. I mean, we had a good time, but we were just, like, when Dr. Feelgood started playing, we were like, we know this one, but we didn't quite know the word, so we were just, blah, 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 feel good, blah, 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 all right, and, Vince Neil came out, and he was like, how you motherfuckers doing at motherfucking Jones Beach motherfucking on this motherfucking Friday night?
Yeah, yeah.
And then my friend JT, who was so drunk, just started screaming, I worship Satan! So we were assholes. But, I mean, I had a good time.
I did the same thing at the Hollywood Bowl when they did Tchaikovsky's Fourth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You guys are so similar, it's uncanny.
Before, we move on to the topics, which we're going to have to in a minute. You also had like a webcomic, like Traveler. What is, real quick, tell us about that.
No, it's kind of really cool, and I feel like I can say that because the guy that I write it with does all the artistry, the illustrations.
Yeah, drawings.
And, yes, the drawings. Simon's drawings. it looks like a fucking comic, you know what I mean? And, like, it's so cool to write a script, and then see it, exactly, you know, and I've written tons of stuff that, you know, I haven't been able to actually see.
Goes in a drawer.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, it's basically a Doctor Who parody, but you don't have to have seen Doctor Who at all to enjoy it. I mean,
I don't watch Doctor Who, and I looked at it, and now that you're saying that, I totally see what you're saying.
It's called Doctor Why.
Well, the Traveler, he's like traveling in his space and time machine, but it's sort of making fun, not even of, but sort of with those sort of sci-fi cliches, you know, and he's got his companion that doesn't want to be along with him, and they go on these sort of different adventures, and it's been a lot of fun. We're on our second sort of storyline right now.
Is he the captain of his time machine?
Well, that is a mystery to be solved, actually, so we'll see.
It's not a sea-bearing vessel.
It is.
It's a time and space-bearing vessel.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, so comic, storyteller, metal enthusiast. Where can people find out more about you?
Yes, well,
plug away.
On Facebook, there is the blog, which is on zackforreal.com, zackforreal.com. But I think if you just look it up under Facebook, Metal Mondays blog is the easiest way to find it.
Okay.
Because there's more content up on there. And also, The Traveler, I need to get a better URL, but at the moment it's just thetraveler.zackforreal.com.
So if they go to Zach for Real, they can find it, though.
Angelfire.com.
Exactly. Geocities.
You say Geocities. I always said Geocities.
You know, I did too, but I've heard so many people say Geocities that I assume that's how it's pronounced. But
it's the tomato of our time.
Of internet circa 1997.
Exactly.
So, ZachForReal.com.
Yes.
And we'll have links up. You'll be able to find it.
Cool.
If you're a good listener, you've been there already because we have a link on our Facebook page.
All right.
So, Johnny Depp is a dirty racist, and so is Disney. This is some things you're starting to hear about this Lone Ranger movie coming out, because Johnny Depp plays Tonto, and Tonto...
From Wizard of Oz?
Yes. He was the Indian in The Wizard of Oz.
No, her dog.
Johnny Depp's playing a Native American.
Right. Yes.
And there's a lot of talk, is this racist? Is this, like, red face? You know? Johnny Depp claims to be part Cherokee. And by the way, it's always Cherokee. When people claim to be part Native American, it's always like, oh, I'm 1/8 Cherokee.
Yeah, you never run into a lot of people claiming to be 1/8 Chumash, you know?
Yeah.
It's because, like, if someone comes up to you and says, name a Indian tribe, I mean, he's like, Cherokee, you know? I think it's just the easiest one to kind of grab onto.
It does come, because the trail of tears.
Or Apache, maybe.
Apache.
Pawnee. That's the one that comes to my mind
now. There you go. So, do you think this is a problem?
You know, it's funny that you bring it up. Even before you had mentioned it I'd been thinking about this because I was watching TV and I saw a commercial for the Lone Ranger, followed by a commercial for the Native American College Fund.
Probably thought, not a mistake, by the way.
Probably not.
Yeah.
And I just sort of thought, like, hey, wait a minute. Because, yeah, you know, the term red face did come to mind. And
but his face is painted white.
Yes.
Nevertheless.
It was very interesting to me that, you know, apparently in 2002 he had done an interview where he was like, yeah, I think my grandma's part Cherokee or something. But it was never, like, confirmed by the Cherokee Nation. Or
if only there were ways we could do this. Like, I don't know, DNA.
Exactly. But they don't officially recognize him, I guess, as a... but I also think it's interesting because it's not just that it's Johnny Depp playing a Native American. I mean, if you notice, he's doing it in the sort of 50s way of
portraying. There's also a tradition of this character Tonto from the Lone Ranger show from the 30s to the 50s in the serial. So
is that racist? Is that a racist
portrayal? I think it probably
is. I mean,
I
never watched old.
He was in the TV show. He was played by a Native American.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also, it was like the 30s and 40s. So yes, it was racist. I can just tell you it was racist because it was racist. But now it's a way that's like Disney's trying to have its cake and eat it too. And my understanding of the way the character is framed in this movie is that he's sort of the odd fish even from his tribe. Mm. So he's kind of an outsider and a dreamer. And so by
he's the Jack Sparrow.
But no, Jack Sparrow is Jack Sparrow. You don't need to excuse Jack Sparrow.
No, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's going to be that. Like he's like...
You
Jack
know
Sparrow
what?
Was the odd pirate.
The comedian Kumail Nanjiani tweeted about a week and a half ago, quote, we should make a movie based on the Lone Ranger, end quote. An executive at Disney who's about to get fired in 2 weeks. Which basically is saying that this movie's not going to do well.
Well, how do you think this looks, Zach?
Well, you know, I was actually talking about this today, and even though the idea came up like, hey, wait a minute, Johnny Depp isn't Native American, I mean, you know, he's conveniently an A-list actor as well, so I get it. And even though he's doing the very kind of, me Tonto, you Lone Ranger, white man, you know, like I keep expecting him to say how at some point, you know? But I sort of, is it a little bit racist? Maybe, but it's kind of how the character was in the TV show.
And also, the other thing to keep in mind is, not many Native Americans around these days to really mobilize.
Yeah,
and
they're busy with their casinos.
Yeah.
Who are you going to get? Who would you get to play? What Native American?
That one guy
Adam
died.
Beach?
Well, didn't that one famous Native American died? Gordon Lightfoot? What was his name?
What?
The famous Indian who was in
Ironized
the Wolves. He had been the...
Was it Wes Studi? No, he's still alive.
No, the one... It was the big Native American who acted in all these movies.
I know
was...
who you're talking about, but I can't think of his name.
It doesn't matter. You know what? Yes, it's a little racist. It's a little weird. It's a $250 million summer blockbuster from Disney, and Disney could buy every remaining Native American if they wanted to.
It's not going to be the thing that makes the movie bad.
Exactly.
But the movie's going to be bad, right?
I imagine
so.
It's
going to be bloated. That's what I'm getting.
Well, it seems like it's these really cool kind of action pieces that they've woven a story around instead of writing a good story and including some cool action sequences.
They built their own railroad with 6 miles of track because, you know, Gore Verbinski.
You got it. Well, you know what? Here's my only... I think it's going to fucking suck. But I always go into every movie hoping it's good, obviously.
Sure.
And I remember when I saw Pirates of the Caribbean, I was like, this movie's not going to be good. And then I walked out of it going, that was so much fun, and that was so cool, and that was so... So I hold out a little bit of hope that maybe John... But no. By the time you listen to this podcast, you will probably
the truth will be out.
It.
I won't be seeing it in the theater. I'll see it on DVD.
I'll probably see it in the
I'll
theater.
I'll be but seeing it on a bootleg I buy on the streets of Shanghai.
There you go.
I'm not going to be happy about it, but I'm going to see it in the theater. I have to see it to review. Ugh. I'm trying to weasel my way out of this one. But I don't think I can.
I'll see it. I'm more excited to actually see this than I am to see still Man of Steel, which I haven't seen yet. So.
Well, we've talked Man of Steel.
Moving on.
But another actor was talking about his new film recently, Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be in Kick-Ass 2. The sequel, I guess nobody asked for, but I guess we'll be happy to see. I don't know. But he said he cannot support.
Well, Kick-Ass 2 is based on the comic book series. It's a super violent action hero movie where none of the superheroes have any powers. And the first film came out a few years ago with Christopher Mintz-Platz, McLovin, and Chloe Grace Moretz, who played like a 12-year-old girl named, I don't know, the Purple Cunt? What was her name?
Hit Girl.
What was her name?
Hit Girl.
There we go.
Hit Girl.
So this is the sequel. Everyone's a few years older and pimplier, and now we got Jim Carrey in this one.
And he says he can't support the film. He acted in this film. Probably
read the script. Knew what it was about.
Got a ton of money. He said he can't support it after Sandy Hook. Now, look, I understand. I mean, we were all, like, felt after Sandy Hook, we were all, like, very upset, and as we should be. But, you know, there was violence before that. Why did he not have a problem with violence and also children involved with violence?
And he had seen the first one where Chloe Grace Moretz is a violent child killing and cursing people out. It was going to be more of that.
Yeah, so I kind of have an issue with him coming out against the movie he's in. I can understand if maybe he looks at it and goes, oh, I feel uneasy now after Sandy Hook. But don't say anything then, because you worked on this thing. Other people worked on this thing.
And he promoted The Majestic, so come on.
I do think that it's important to consider that Jim Carrey might be a little nuts. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is the same guy that posted a YouTube video professing his love to, who was it, Emma Stone?
Scarlett. Oh, Emma Stone, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and apparently Jenny McCarthy has said that he's kind of out to lunch.
Well, Jenny McCarthy's a little
out. Well, yeah, she's not exactly the standard
she's
by which we...
with her parents out there, get your kids vaccinated. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
There are
that's right, that's her
there
thing.
There are diseases out there. Vaccines do not cause
if
autism.
If you don't get vaccinated, your kid will end up like Jenny McCarthy.
Yes. Exactly.
So... But,
you know what, this is just, I feel like this is a weird combination of crazy actor, running his mouth, bad publicity, and a bad publicist, maybe,
now,
not getting ahead of this.
Can we also, do we want to give him any credit and say, because I'm getting on him because, well, I mean, you were in the Deadpool, for Christ's sake, granted you were a struggling actor at the time, but, I mean, you know, he's been in violent things or crazy things or weird things.
Number
before.
23.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my question is, could this legitimately just be a change of heart? Should we give him some credit that maybe Sandy Hook did affect him, and he's not crazy, and maybe he regrets his ever supporting any violent movie?
It seems weird, you know,
but if he pops up in anything that involves violence
from this
and
point on,
children,
yeah.
Even putting kids in peril.
What if it's comedically in Dumb and Dumber 2?
I'm gonna take issue with them. Because then you're a fucking hypocrite. So you're on notice as a future possible enemy of the podcast, Jim Carrey. If you do anything out of line...
You're on the big board.
You're on the big board. I'm keeping an eye on you.
Well, you know what?
By the way...
This movie doesn't look very good anyway.
This movie is going to get a lot more of attention because of this.
Now, that's also, if you want to take the cynical point of view on this, maybe this is sneaky marketing?
To maybe that's
see
why
see how many kids get killed in Kick-Ass 2.
Maybe that's why they don't mind that he's doing it. Because it gets some attention.
Anything, yeah, it's just like, you know, as long as they're sort of distanced in a way, you know, it's good publicity.
I was like, oh, it's not us, it's
exactly,
him,
any
yeah.
publicity.
But come see our movie if you want to see what,
exactly.
What Jim Carrey's complaining
what's
about.
What's he griping
about?
Well, the writer said, you know, Mark Millar put out a whole letter saying, listen, he knew what it was about.
Yeah.
I respect his opinion, but he cashed a check. So
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? He should take all... Jim Carrey should take all the money he earned on this and donate it to the families from...
Yeah, there you go, Jim Carrey.
The Sandy Hook.
You hear that, Jim Carrey? I know you're listening.
We may need to discuss this next week, but Jennifer Lopez performing in Turkmenistan, that may have to go on this list for next week as well. Another misguided celebrity.
Yeah, yeah. Who should take all the money and... Just... You don't like what you did... You're rich. Take all the money and give it to the people.
Real Alec Baldwin does these Capital One commercials. Every penny he makes from those commercials, from day one, has gone straight to charity. He only does those for charity. That's his, and he gives all the money to charity.
That's pretty cool.
So
that's good. Alec Baldwin, you
may say questionable things on Twitter,
but you're on the good side of it. Jim Carrey's on a bad side right now. You guys got to work this out. So. We love... Do you like lists?
I love lists, man.
Lists are the best because they...
Or the worst.
Because they're the best because they're the worst.
Especially if it's like a nice round number, like 10, 50, 100, something like that.
Oh, do we have 100 things for you to sort through?
Well, we're not going to go through 100, but Entertainment Weekly, a publication that we steal from quite often on the Will Show and podcast, they did a big issue, the 100th all-time greatest.
What? Why? Was it a slow news week? Did they need all of a sudden today? They had to do
it does seem like a weird kind of, haven't we done this already?
Yeah, in the middle of the summer. Well, they always have to have a couple of double issues each year.
To pad out the...
Yeah, well, also, I guess to give the staff like a little bit of a vacation or something.
And did you read the opening little editor's note at the beginning?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And he's kind of like, well, I looked around and I didn't like those other lists. And
well,
like,
you know, Mr. Editor.
Yeah.
Well... Here's the problem. Well, we're not going to go through 100 movies.
99.
But they did movies, music, TV show, books. Sean, what do you think the greatest book of all time is?
50 Shades of Grey.
You'd think.
No, not Twilight Eclipse.
And I didn't know they'd go back this far when they make this list.
To the 1990s.
Anna Karenina.
Which I can make a very serious argument for. I love that book.
And I'm like, okay, and then...
But you know what's wrong? America's Broken, Moby Dick's not good enough for you, Huck Finn? Come on.
Their next book is The Great Gatsby.
Okay.
On their list.
And I also wonder if it's got anything to do with it being kind of a movie...
Yeah, they both read those two books within the last year.
Yeah.
So that's why it's at the top of their list.
And I notice on their list it's all fiction. There's no nonfiction.
Well, you know, you got to draw some lines.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I think it would be implied nonfiction.
I want to take the 100 greatest nonfiction
books. Anything. If any idiot put together 16 pages and stitched it together, that's a book.
Yeah. The Bible.
Yeah.
Let's look at the movies here. Number one on their list.
Well, go 10 to. You want to go 10 to 1 or 1 down?
I want to, with the movies, I want to go up because I have a point here.
Okay.
Number one, Citizen Kane. It makes sense. It's an important film. It changed a lot of the way movies are made.
And it's an entertaining film, which people forget. It's a damn entertaining
movie.
It's
a lot of fun. Number two, The Godfather.
Same.
Again, you can't argue. Can you argue that, Zach?
No. Okay. I'm surprised that number three didn't beat number two, but...
Okay, yeah, I could have flip-flopped these two. Casablanca's number three. Great film. Then the list... gets a little different. And
took three movies for this thing to get derailed.
Now... These are some of the movies I'm going to say are great movies, but
number can I guess?
Number four, guess number four.
Lone Ranger.
Yeah, Lone Ranger. They got a sneak preview and they said this is so good, we're adding it to. No, number four is Bonnie and Clyde.
Nope,
that's a weird one. Yeah,
it's a great film. It's an important film, but it's not top 10 of all time.
No,
because it did. I guess it did usher in the, and I don't know if they're talking about social thing, because it did usher in the kind of whole new era right before the 70s and stuff, but it's not.
I would have switched Easy Rider even over Bonnie and Clyde,
but
honestly.
That's not top 10 material either.
Well,
for me. I mean, I love
number
Easy
four,
Rider.
Though, really, with Seven Samurais.
But here's the problem with these sort of movie lists. I mean, like, once you really get past five, I mean, A, everyone's taste
okay,
is
okay, you want rule number one? Here's rule number one. Top 10 list? You need to go from 10 decades of movies, and you kind of you can't have two movies from the same decade. Maybe make that as rule number one. If there wasn't like a...
Well, that's the thing with these lists. I want hard rules. I want to know how much cultural impact affects over maybe just pure artistry and things like that. Oh, and I have some issues with that when we get to television. But number five is Psycho. I can't complain about that being in the top 10.
No.
It's a Wonderful Life is number six. That's a wonderful film.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be in my top 10, but I can't argue.
I get it. Yeah.
Right.
Number seven is Mean Streets.
Which I saw semi-recently, like a couple years ago. And yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting to watch Martin Scorsese's first film.
Or first big, like,
exactly.
Gangster film.
You know, a young De Niro. But yeah, it was a bit amateurish.
It's rough and sloppy.
Yeah.
And my whole thing is Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, Goodfellas, all
better
than
Mean Streets.
Mean Streets.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And... why aren't they? Why Mean Streets? It doesn't make sense. They say it's electrifying.
I would put Age of Innocence above Mean Streets, even, and I know people.
But that wouldn't be in a top. You
I would put Age
that.
Of Innocence.
I don't remember where it is in the list, and I realize that it's maybe not the best movie cinematically, but I would put Back to the Future.
Yes.
How about
Bill and
five.
Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Okay, now we're getting.
Whoa, Superman Returns,
dude. Bill and Ted is my favorite movie ever.
I fucking love Bill and Ted. It's on my personal top 10.
Yeah. It's my number one.
It's a great movie.
But no, seriously, why can't a movie like Back to the Future be on one of these top 10 lists?
Back to the Future is good enough to be in a top 10
because it's not serious, you know?
So neither is... Keep going.
The greatest setup and payoff of all time.
Absolutely.
Well, keep reading down the list.
Number eight is another one I have an issue with. The Gold Rush, Charlie Chaplin.
Now, that's not a serious movie.
Okay. But it's Charlie Chaplin.
I don't think that's even the best Chaplin
film. Well, you know what? I just rewatched Great Dictator last week with Shawnee.
That's true.
That is a seriously flawed movie.
Yes,
but seriously,
it's good.
It ends on a 5-minute speech where he just talks to the microphone.
Well, but you know what? That was Chaplin being more concerned with getting a message out.
And that was like Chaplin footing the bill and being able to do whatever the fuck he wanted.
And at the time, but I mean, to
me, earnest, yeah.
City Lights would be the Chaplin film I'd put.
And above that, I'd put Buster Keaton.
I think Chaplin, I mean, like, it's kind of... Is the kid better than the Gold Rush, better
it's
than Modern...
It's all kind of the same, you see.
Yeah, maybe Modern Life. Modern Times. Yeah.
Okay.
Nashville, number 9.
The TV show?
No.
This is so weird to me.
This isn't even the best Altman film of the 70s.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on
that. I would
that.
Even put, like, MASH over Nashville.
Even MASH, I just, like, not top 10, though. I mean, like, you're saying
Nashville's
top
Miller.
10? That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. And number 10, Gone with the Wind. I can't complain about that being
Gone with the Wind should have been up higher, frankly.
I mean, these are all American films, and none of these are foreign films.
They have foreign films later on the list.
Oh, so see, I would rather they not even put foreign
Seven
films.
Seven Samurai's number 17.
Ugh.
The Sorrow and the Pity is number 20.
Never heard of it.
Fuck that.
It's a documentary about the Nazi occupation.
That's the movie that L.V. Singer wants to go see over and over again in Annie Hall. Which, where is Annie Hall in the top 10?
Number 13.
Not top 10.
Blue Velvet is 15.
That's like, another kind of weird one.
Weird. I mean, I love
Blue
Spielberg
Velvet. In the top 10?
No.
When,
no
wait,
Cuba.
When
who was 10?
The
who
first
was 10?
Spielberg film is Jaws, number 18.
Did we say what 10 was? Gone with the Wind. That's right.
You got a lot of Spielberg later on the list, a lot of Hitchcock.
So you're telling me Mean Streets is better than...
Back to the Future?
No, Seven Samurai, or even...
2001 A Space Odyssey.
Or, you know, I can understand people having... Because 2001 A Space Odyssey is not his most entertaining movie. I'd put Clockwork Orange over 2001. Mm. Once again, it goes back to criteria.
But you know what? I'd put... If I were making a list of, like, we're sending movies to outer space to show the aliens or something...
Mean Streets.
Like, because they're things of cultural or artistic significance. Clockwork Orange is my favorite film of all time, but I have no problem with 2001.
They would look
being.
At it and be like, got
but
it all wrong.
I have no problem with Space Odyssey being ahead of it, though. You know what I mean? All like, right. I think that's... It's such a powerful film seeing it. Wizard of Oz is number 28.
28, by the way. 28 for Wizard of Oz. One of the most... well-loved movies of the
and
past 100 years. I mean, yeah, exactly. Like, number 28. You're telling me that Mean Streets is better than Wizard of Oz?
And Sorrow and the Pity?
Yeah, this is a very strange
list.
All right,
spin it over to TV quickly.
I'll go over to TV in a second here. Yeah, let's get over here.
Because we could just do an hour just on this list.
Which would drive us crazy. But I will say, number 100, The Sweet Smell of Success.
Which should be much higher because it's a fantastic movie.
Okay, I'm going to go backwards, like you suggested, for TV.
Quick thing with TV before you get in the list. TV is interesting because how do you judge TV? Is it based on... the best season, the best overall, or consistency?
I think if you're doing a list, you have to go overall.
Yeah, right. I think it's you're looking at people's perception of it at this point.
Because, like, I would argue a show like The Office, which had several crummy seasons, knocks it down on the list very hard if you're looking at it all the time.
Yeah. I would, too. Number 10, Yeshua Shows.
Okay.
It's important, variety show.
I wouldn't have even thought of it, but
Sid Caesar, you know, it's...
Mel Brooks came out of there, Woody Allen came out of there, Carl Reiner, yeah, okay.
Number 9, Mad Men.
Okay.
I mean,
all time?
I think it should be in the top 10, yeah.
Number 8, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Not top 10.
No.
Last three seasons just weren't up the same level.
Number 7, now we start to get into some real serious
classic
stuff. Number 7, The Andy Griffith Show.
Never seen an episode.
Oh, you're missing out, man.
Oh, it's good. I mean, it was, you know. Number 6, All in the Family.
Yes.
Classic, great show.
Sure.
Important
great show.
Culturally important. Number 5.
A ballsy show, too.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of ballsy, number 5, The Sopranos.
Not South Park?
That's on the 100, but it's not in the top 10. Sopranos, very important, cultural. I mean, it changed television forever.
Absolutely.
Both in the characters we watch, pay television, things like that. Number 4, The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Again, a very culturally relevant, popular show. Number 3, Seinfeld.
Okay.
In my opinion, maybe the funniest show of all time. Number 2...
60 Minutes.
The Simpsons.
Yes.
Which would also be one of the funniest shows of all time.
Simpsons is going to be hard to place because that show's run for so long.
But once you get to, and I know what number 1 is, but thinking about it versus The Simpsons, I mean, it kind of comes down to genre, you know? I mean, like, is The Simpsons better? Or?
I've got a big problem with number one.
Okay.
And to be fair, I didn't watch the show, but I know it's extremely well done and a great show.
Spartacus, Blood and Sand.
How did you know?
Number one is The Wire.
Have you seen it? Of course I have.
No.
Once you see it, I think you might. It's not, maybe, is it the best show ever? I don't know.
But here's my problem with The Wire being number one. A great show. Sopranos, Seinfeld. These are shows that were both phenomenal television and storytelling.
And
you can't argue. You could argue equally or better to The Wire, possibly, and also had a huge cultural impact. I argue The Wire has a much insular impact.
That is true. So the thing with The Wire is brilliant at being The Wire. And it may influence people tangentially, but you will never have another show like The Wire. And so it exists in its own strange universe. There are some movies that are like this. I'm trying to think would be a good example. But it's just The Wire is The Wire. And for that reason, well, I kind of agree with you, they need to be lower on list. I would argue that Lost, while I have serious problems that we've discussed it, but I would argue that Lost should be argued as more influential than The Wire.
Yes. Whoa. I can argue.
I don't know about
but
that.
But yeah, influential. I'm not saying better. I'm saying okay. Influential.
I will argue, and this should not be in the top 10, but I would argue even a show like Star Trek.
Yeah, sure.
Is more influential.
Why isn't Star Trek? Even Star, next, yeah.
Star Trek is on the list, but I think it's like 90 something.
Well, maybe because it's clunky. I mean, like
it's
you clunky. Said.
It's not the best made thing.
But it's well remembered. Well, here's what we're thinking.
Star Trek's 91.
Fans of the Wilshawn podcast, message us what would be on your top 10 or number 1. Send us either your favorite movie or favorite 5 or 10 or television shows. Let's get a conversation going. So post on the Facebook page. Tweet at us or email us, and maybe we can discuss it. I know Andrea Marchant has some ideas.
We're running short on time, but I'll tell you the number one in music was the number one album they have of
Bieber.
All time is Justin Bieber's.
I don't even know what it's called.
Bieber.
Bieber Rama Rama.
It's the Beatles' Revolver.
Okay.
And that's hard to argue.
Not Any Iron Beatles? Maiden's The Killers.
What's that?
Not Iron Maiden's Killers.
Well, you know, it's like, even before I read the list, I knew it would either be Rubber Soul or Revolver just because it just
Beatles.
Is. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, you have a lot of stuff in the top 10 that's just got, like, the Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street.
Which is one of the best albums of all
that's
time.
That's number three. Nirvana Nevermind is number 10. Like, things that kind of just have to be in there. Pet Sounds, number 9.
Springsteen?
Springsteen's not in the
really?
Top 10.
Oh, are you kidding
Where's
me?
Where's the first Springsteen?
Fuck this list.
Music, it's funny because I feel like you can have a pretty comprehensive top whatever list of movies.
Yeah.
Once you get into TV and books, it gets really hard. TV and music, I mean, it gets really hard. Because, I mean, it's so subjective.
Number two is Prince.
Which I've never heard.
Purple Rain?
No, the Batman soundtrack, strangely enough.
No, Purple Rain.
Really?
Trust?
I am not seeing. Now I'm just. Before I move on,
this is good podcasting.
Find Springsteen.
Listen to him
read.
When I was growing up. They,
wait a second.
They
there has to be. Springsteen has to be on. I must have missed it because this can't be right.
Got Rick Springfield about Bruce Springsteen for some reason.
There's no. Is there no.
Why is the Garden State soundtrack higher than Born to Run?
I don't see any Springsteen. I'm going to have to look into this because that doesn't make any
Fuck
sense.
Fuck you. You're the enemy of the podcast.
That is weird. That is where. I must be mistaken. There has to be Springsteen on there. Maybe not. Fuck you, Entertainment Weekly. Well, speaking of people who go fuck themselves. So, it seems like each week while we're doing this podcast, big news is happening. Last week, and this big news always ends up bringing me an enemy, which is good. Last week, I complained, you know, we had turned on the basketball game right before the podcast was over, and we saw Miami fans leaving while their team made an amazing comeback. Well, last week, there was this woman, and I don't care what your politics are, what your thoughts on this are, but there was this woman, Wendy Davis, who was doing this filibuster down in Texas about this anti-abortion bill or SB5 or whatever. And this was big news because she had been doing this all day. She had to filibuster for like 13 hours.
Stay on topic, couldn't sit down, couldn't eat, couldn't do anything.
And an hour to go, the Republicans there were like, hey, you went off topic, we're going to vote on this bill, and the people in the what do you call
State
it?
House, yeah.
State House. The people in the State House started yelling and screaming, and they couldn't vote, and people were yelling.
Because it wasn't off-topic.
Wasn't off-topic, you know? Which was bullshit.
Yeah.
She was still on-topic. But
the big happenings in Austin,
you
Texas.
You know, and people are going nuts on Twitter about it. Everyone's freaking out. And to that point, yeah, it's like she was on-topic. So I'm like, oh, fuck me. I'm driving home from Sean's podcast studio south. And I'm like, I'm going to get home. I'm going to turn on the news. I want to watch this happen. This is history. This is women's rights history. This is your home state of Texas history. And I get there, and I turn on the news. I turn on CNN because this is a 24-hour news network. So, obviously, they're there to cover news 24
Anderson
hours
Cooper
a
is
day.
Up her butt as we speak.
And I turn it on, and it's Piers Morgan, a rerun of Piers Morgan talking about the amount of calories that are in a blueberry muffin. This is what's going on. Piers Morgan is rambling on about muffins. Meanwhile, Wendy Davis is trying to defend the muffins of all the women in Texas, and you're not going to that? And I got a big issue with this, because then what's the point? Why do we have this? Why do we have a 24-hour news network if we're not going to cover news? There's the muffin isn't making any news, and that is why you, CNN, are the enemy of the podcast. Fuck you. Go fuck yourself. You've been irrelevant for a long time anyway, and now I'm putting a nail in your coffin.
Well, what about your sweet Rachel Maddow over MSNBC? What were they doing?
I was a little upset with them because they weren't covering it either. However, at least Rachel Maddow had done stories about it that night. CNN, all they talked about were blueberry muffins and George Zimmerman. That's it. You wouldn't have even known this was going on. But yeah, they could have, MSNBC could have done something. Fox could have done something. This was like live television. This is why we have live television.
So how did you find out what was going on?
I went to the best news source around, Martha Plimpton, on Twitter, who has a wonderful organization, A is Four, and she tweets a lot about women's rights and stuff like that. And yes.
From Hope, Raising Hope?
Raising
and
Hope.
Goonies.
And the Goonies. She was a Goonie, and you're just a fucking goon, Wolf Blitzer.
Are we short on time?
Well, yeah. No.
Okay, have you seen The Newsroom?
Yes.
Well,
I got some issues with
well,
it.
Well, there's a lot of politics.
Well, the second season, they're in the desert and it's windy.
But I do think that they bring up a lot of good points about just the state of news
media.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, Walter Cronkite would be just rolling
yeah.
over,
yeah,
you know?
Not Murdoch. What the fuck's his name?
Good night, good luck.
Oh,
Edward Murrow? Murrow, yeah. He'd be chain-smoking all night long watching this. And, like, getting out the fucking facts, you know what I'm saying? I mean, like, not reporting on something till you know what's going on.
And the other issue with this story, this was a very fast-changing story. Like, at first they said, oh, they took the vote passed, or the vote didn't pass.
And that's usually what CNN is good at, putting the reporters in the middle of a fast-changing story and just saying whatever comes out of their fucking mouths.
But instead, I was like, and even Martha Plimpton was tweeting, like, she wasn't sure what was happening.
People were watching, the Texas Tribune or something on their live stream on the internet.
And I really needed, especially since I've been out of the loop for a couple hours doing the podcast, I really could have used that news source to try to inform me stuff. So, you know what? CNN, fuck you. Martha Plimpton, I'm going to you for all my news. Tell me what's going on in Egypt right now, Martha Plimpton.
I can tell you what's going on in Egypt.
But, you know, it's like, it's just ridiculous. What's the point? Why do we have these channels then?
Well, I mean, like, there's a loss of integrity over fucking ratings and who what's going to get the people to
200,000
watch.
200,000 people were watching it live streamed. That's more viewers than CNN gets ever.
They could have had all those eyeballs on them.
Yep.
Well, they don't deserve them. Before we leave, since it is Lone Ranger Week here on the Will Sean Podcast.
Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah. A great little story I heard about the Lone Ranger himself, Armie Hammer. He was talking about before he got married. You know, he's a good-looking young guy.
He's
here
a
in
piece
Hollywood.
Of he's a man.
So he did a
him
lot.
Him and
of,
his twin brother.
Yeah, both of them. They would go out. They'd be running trains on girls.
They wouldn't even know it. And now he's in a movie on a train.
That doesn't go through Waco.
Exactly. Well, there is a railroad there now.
But
they came to their senses.
But Armie Hammer was talking about dating and all these women he would be with and stuff like that. He was being kind of candid about it. And he said he once was dating a girl who, during sex, pulled out a butcher knife and said she was going to cut him while they were fucking, because, as she says, love leaves scars, and you don't have any. Now, the kicker to this story is, after this incident, after he wrestled a butcher's knife out of her hand, he kept dating her. So,
ballsy.
The sex must have been amazing.
I would imagine so.
As it would be with an insane woman anyway.
Sure.
So, I gotta ask you, Zach. Mm-hmm. Woman pulls a butcher knife on you during sex. Deal breaker?
Probably, but only because it's just not something I'm into. I mean, like, I know people that are into weird, like, knife play, needle shit. I mean, it's fine, but there needs to be some communication. Don't surprise me with the butcher knife.
You know, honestly, where were you hiding that because you're naked?
Yeah, I mean, I wondered that, too. He didn't say.
Unless she said, I'll be right back, and then...
Unless it was, like, a basic instinct thing, and she had it, like, under the mattress of a kind of pillow.
But that means she planned it.
Was
there a safe word in place for this sort of
thing?
I'm
assuming not.
Yeah, Winklevoss. It's like, you don't want to, you know, find out you're fucking Jason Voorhees' sister or something, you know?
That's a deal breaker. That's just, no.
No unexpected cutlery in the bedroom, thank you very much.
What, though? So is there a line? I'm trying to think of...
It's too much of a breeze that's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah.
I'm like a panda. Conditions have to be perfect.
Exactly.
It's very. They've been trying to get Sean to mate for
very
years.
Very specific porn.
Now he's telling my mother.
Trying to stab me during sex.
Before or after is fine, but not during.
Trying to stab me during sex without warning.
But that's also a weird thing to say. Love causes scars and you don't have any. It's like, hey, I thought we were just friends, you know?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah,
what's going on? Like,
maybe that's why...
Maybe what freaked him out more is that she dropped the L word.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The first time she told me she loved him. How do you react to that? Gee, sorry, Army.
And they will tell you with that knife point, you have to say it back.
It's awkward when someone texts it to you.
Oh, man.
Someone here has a fear of intimacy.
I guess trying to stab me while having sex with you is a deal breaker. Who am I kidding?
Shut it down.
I'd probably still date the girl, too.
Wait, is that what she said? Trying to stab you during sex is a deal breaker?
No. Nobody.
That's
said
what Will
that.
Said.
That's what I said, but I don't know if it would be for me because I have problems.
Tolerated some shit.
I've tolerated some crazy people.
Dating
for
wise?
A lot less. Yeah.
Okay.
For a lot, you know. So.
I don't need to get cut. I don't need to get fucking hit. I'll spank you. You better not spank me.
There you go. I know.
Is that the motto of Tech of Waco?
Well, yeah, exactly. University of North Texas.
Well,
sorry, that's
you. I'll whoop your ass, but you ain't whooping mine.
And on that note,
thank you.
Thank you, Zach, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Before we leave, do the thing. Plug some things again.
Well, you can find my stuff on Facebook under Zach Becetta, Z-A-C-K. A lot of people love the C-H, but it's Z-A-C-K.
Blame your parents.
There's the blog on Facebook, Metal Mondays blog on Facebook, and the traveler.zachforreal.com. You can find everything on zachforreal.com.
Twitter?
You know, I find it very difficult to maintain a Twitter because everything I want to say on Twitter, I say on Facebook, and then I feel silly saying
it. I had that issue, but I realize I have different audiences.
That's true. Well, you can. I do have a Twitter. It's zach2981 because I was still in sort of, you know, college
February
9th.
Huh? You're born February 9th?
December 29th. 2981, 29th of 1981.
Oh, the 29th. Got it. I thought it was February 9th, 81. Okay, 2981.
You're on the right track.
The
Which doesn't go to Waco.
I suggest you tweet more.
Because
it's a good way to build up an audience.
I still got like 100 followers that are like been hanging on for a year more.
Just waiting. Come on.
Another gem.
What's coming next? Follow him on Twitter. And force him to tweet more.
Yes, and see what I say after such a long absence from social media.
Maybe you should go on Twitter to promote this appearance.
I will.
Sean, plug.
Same as usual. You can follow me on Twitter at TheSeanDavid. You can also like my Facebook page. And you can get my book on Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, Triumvirs. And hopefully I'll have an upcoming show... This month, I will let you guys know as soon as I have written it and book a date.
And I will let you know that you can follow me at The Real Will Link. And you can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on the PM show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I'll be reviewing next week. I'll be reviewing The Lone Ranger and probably telling you how much I wanted to kill myself during it.
I can think of someone who won't think it's racist.
Yeah, or maybe not racist enough. No, no, I'm
He's
joking.
A very nice man.
This will be the first time he listens.
Great.
And you can also read reviews of mine at the website U1Can, like the city in France. And I will be performing at Tattletales at Shetty's Public Parlor on Wednesday, July 24th. So mark your calendars.
I'm writing it down right now.
I'll be there.
And Zach, if you're going to be performing again at Tattletales, let us know. We'll put it up on the site.
I am going to be there. I'm checking if it's the 10th or the 11th, whatever the Wednesday is.
You check while I tell you who's on the show next week. On the next week.
12th, apparently.
The 12th. He's going to be performing the 12th. So go to Shetty's on the 12th. Go to Shetty's on the 24th. And tune in next week because we're going to be talking to Jackson Truax.
He speaks for the artists.
He writes, he does a lot of criticism, but he also puts on this terrific show, The Fet, The Creative Fet, where it's actually a very good place to try out new material, if you're ever interested.
Hell yeah, man.
It's a good day, and Will and I both perform there. It's a great show. We'll talk about it next week.
Cool. We'll talk about it all next week. And the week after that, big guest, we have Dylan Brody, who is a very accomplished essayist and comedian and an interesting intellectual all around.
And a man of karate.
Yes. I want to talk about that. I know he's here to talk about like his spoken word stuff, but I want to talk about he's like a like he's an expert in like...
I don't know.
He can snap our necks, basically.
Yeah. So that'll happen.
That'll
the
happen.
Final, that'll be, and that will be the 75th episode.
A quarter quell.
We will be killed by Dylan Brody on the air.
That's a hell of a finale.
Both intellectually and physically.
So tune in for that. Zach, thank you once again. I hope you had fun.
Absolutely, man.
And that's it for the Will Sean Podcast. I'm Sean David.
I'm Will Link.
And we're finished.
We're finished.